Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
Planned Parenthood has been in the news a lot in the last couple weeks. Thus far, two videos have been released with Planned Parenthood executives talking about the sale of quote-unquote fetal tissue, aka baby body parts. There are expected to be another five or six released, I believe. The most recent one actually talks about the pricing of the various body parts that would be made available to researchers. They talk about changing the abortion technique in order to be able to harvest the most usable parts. This has helped expose Planned Parenthood, but this type of thing actually has been going on for quite a while. My guest today is Debbie Vinage. She's Executive Director of Largo, Florida-based Children of God for Life. Thanks, Debbie, for being with us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on, Diane.
And your mission is kind of self-explanatory there in the title, but just what is it, though, that you guys do?
Well, Children of God for Life was originally formed as a means of educating the public on stem cell research and the differences between embryonic stem cell and adult stem cell research. And then the issue of aborted fetal research came in when we found out about several childhood vaccines that were made using aborted fetal cell lines. And so that's our mission completely changed.
Oh, yeah.
But that, when I found that out, as a mom, I was just horrified to find that out. And I knew that my children had had some of those vaccines, mm-hmm. and I thought I had a right to know, you know, that I could have been given a choice. So it's definitely a very sensitive subject and one that not a lot of people know a lot about.
Are there a lot of choices out there as far as vaccines? I know, and I'll just briefly touch on this, but I know that our new physician general just met with Merck, which doesn't have the best ethical record, but just met with Merck to start a statewide campaign to educate the parents on the need for vaccinations, because we only have a 91% vaccination rate of children entering kindergarten. Is Merck a good company for our physician general to be speaking with?
Well, that would depend on, Merck is probably the biggest offender of aborted fetal
Merck
cell lines in research. So, it depends, I guess, on what the conversation would be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But Merck does not have a good reputation.
No, not in my opinion.
Yeah.
Not from a moral perspective,
well,
no.
And that's my concern. That's my concern from a moral perspective. Do parents have choices?
Well, in some cases they do. And one of the things that Merck should do, and this is something you may be able to emphasize with them as a possibility, Merck is the sole producer of the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine in the United States. And you know that there was a measles outbreak in mm-hmm. Disney earlier this year. And one of the things that had happened as a result, you know, there was this outbreak and there was a big scare and then there was a measles spread, and I think there was some 175 cases or so, that resulted as across the country. There were 135, I think, in California.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, one of the things that we had warned Merck about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, in 2011, was they stopped producing the morally produced doses of measles and mumps. They used to provide them separately. So what parents would do is they would get the measles and the mumps shot separately and forego the rubella, which is the portion of that vaccine that uses aborted fetal cells.
Okay.
And when they stopped producing it, it left parents no choice but to use MMR, and parents simply stopped. They just said, no, I'm not using it, refused it. And we warned Merck, and we warned the CDC, and we warned the FDA that there'd be outbreaks.
So it's only the rubella part of the MMR that actually uses aborted fetal.
That's right.
And I probably won't get this terminology right. Aborted fetal cell lines. Cell lines.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cell lines.
Yeah.
So
why are
they insisting on having the three together when only the rubella is unethical?
Well, it's really a matter of finances. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's a lot less expensive for Merck to produce one vial.
Okay.
Instead of three
mm-hmm.
separate vials.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what it boils down to, because the components are identical, whether you get them combined or separately. It's just the cost of vial and storage, because you're storing one vaccine
one
versus
rather
three.
Than mm-hmm. two or three.
Right.
Wow.
But then there are people who are contraindicated to maybe one or more of those vaccines. And so it was always helpful to have the separate doses for those people, too. And we want Merck to do it. We petitioned Merck. They first came back and said yes, they would provide them, and then they changed their mind. And
they started looking at the expense, and they're going to lose a dollar or two, and they couldn't afford to lose a dollar or two.
Right. So when they didn't want to provide them separately, we asked them to outsource that to another company that was willing to provide them separately, and they would not do that either.
And they would not do that. They want to be the sole producer of the MMR.
Yeah, and they are the sole producer as well of the chickenpox vaccine, and that uses aborted fetal cells, and there's no alternative for parents in the United States.
Yeah, I heard you have to go to Japan or someplace to get an ethical...
That's correct, and parents have done that, surprisingly. They have a strong enough moral conviction on it, they'll go to Japan and get vaccinated.
Oh, wow. That's amazing and basically it boils down to the money, right? Merck wants, and not just Merck, but other pharmaceuticals who are willing to go the unethical route, it all boils down to money.
It does, and I understand the need. All businesses are in business to make profit. I mean, that's what they're there for. I understand that. But at some point, when you are the producer of the only alternative in the United States, I think there's a social responsibility that goes along with that as well.
Absolutely.
And I think they have that moral responsibility themselves to ensure that people can use measles and mumps vaccine. Rubella was eliminated in the United States, and we haven't had a single native case of rubella in the United States. When I say native, I mean among an American citizen, since 2001.
And 2001, wow.
Yeah, the Center for Disease Control announced that it had been eliminated in 2005. And at that point, you know, there were less than 10 cases per year. And we still hold to that less than 10 cases per year, but none of them, again, have been among American citizens. So parents have, recognized the need for measles and mumps.
Right, but not the rubella.
Not so worried about rubella, right.
So, I don't understand these. these companies are willing to do this, especially since rubella is not an issue in the United States among native-born Americans.
That's right. I mean, they don't want to see a resurgence in it. Certainly, we don't either.
But still.
Right. And rubella is not harmful.
That's just a three-day measles, right?
Yeah. That's the term they used to call it.
I had the three-day measles. Yeah. I remember that.
It's very low-grade fever. It's no big deal. It's a little rash and it goes
more
away.
More dangerous for pregnant women.
That's right. If a pregnant woman contracts rubella in her first trimester, there's a chance that her baby can be born with some form of congenital rubella syndrome, which can cause deafness or blindness. It can cause mental impairment. It can cause miscarriage, too. But the good news on that is that, first of all, most pregnant women are already immune because they've been vaccinated.
Right.
But even if they're not, and they get that test when they go to their first prenatal checkup, when they do blood, they prick your finger and they draw your blood, they will test for rubella immunity. If a mother is not immune, and there was a concern about rubella, she certainly could take a shot of immune globulin, and that will give her protection for the first trimester.
Yeah, which is a dangerous time. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So there's a way around that. Now, back to Planned Parenthood. I mean, these videos, I would hope our listeners have watched. There's a couple, I think, 8-minute videos, plus they also posted the entire 2-plus-hour video of the first encounter, shall I say, with the Planned Parenthood executive, because, of course, the Center for Medical Progress, I believe that's the name of the organization, has been accused of by Planned Parenthood and their supporters of doctoring or severely editing the interview with the first doctor, which is, that's why they posted the entire thing. Anyway, so it's quite evident, though, that Planned Parenthood, at least some of their affiliates, are very much involved in the sale of, although they just say they just don't actually sell the baby body parts for profit, just to cover the cost of shipment and such and the handling fee. I guess it's a shipping and handling fee is what you could call it, according to Planned Parenthood. But they're selling this baby body parts to researchers.
That's correct.
Do we know what the research is for? And we're talking baby, and Planned Parenthood can no longer say just a blob of tissue when they're actually on record right there for everyone for the world to see that they're actually selling baby hearts and lungs and kidneys and even entire heads.
Well, right, and if you pay attention in that last video, there was a part in there where they were talking. She says, the second video that was released, and the woman who they're interviewing, the doctor, said, that when they asked her about pricing, they were haggling over pricing, and she said, well, she had to check with her other offices and see what the going rate was.
Right.
And I thought, well, you know, then apparently, first of all, it's going on in multiple locations.
That's true.
And second, if there was just handling fees, you know, storage and handling, then there would be a set price.
Yeah.
So it's not, it just doesn't wash.
They don't have a price list. I mean,
And, of course, from our concern, it wasn't even as much of the quote-unquote sale, because I know that Planned Parenthood could come back and say, under federal law, it does say that they can be reimbursed for, you know, those type of things, handling fees and storage fees and so forth. However, they cannot change the method of the abortion.
But isn't it also against the law to actually sell baby body parts?
Oh, yes, it is. It is.
But
I'm saying is that they might be able to get around that by saying, well, we were really just talking about getting, you know. But what you cannot get away from is what they said regarding changing the method of the abortion.
Right.
And they talked about that graphically in the first video.
Oh, yeah.
And the second video as well. And they talked about, you know, different types of suction methods that they would use so that to ensure that the organs were intact.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's very important. People don't understand. They think that, well, you know, I think one of the last articles I just saw today came out with that Planned Parenthood said it was kind of like donating blood. Well,
oh my goodness.
No, it's not.
I don't think so. I think the one donating blood, unless it's by a vampire who's attacking you, you're going to walk away from the encounter.
My goodness. Well, and exactly. And it's not like the baby is the body of the woman.
That's,
it's not like it's her body.
That's true.
This is one of the things that's always said, well, it's my choice, it's my body, my choice. No, actually, this is another
individual.
Yes. That's right. And you cannot legitimately make the decision, seriously, cannot legitimately, from a moral perspective, make a decision to end someone's life and then donate their remains. It would be, if you can imagine, if there was a murderer and he killed someone, he can't say, oh, and I'll donate, you know, the baby or the body or the human, whatever.
So it
makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah. And, but you know, this is, everyone is in shock on these, about these videos, but yet, apparently, this type sale of baby body parts, this is not something that's new in the United States. It's been going on for quite a while.
That's correct.
Yeah.
It really has.
And you guys have several videos, DVDs out. I know they're referenced on your website. Plus, there was a news release just issued just a few days ago where you mentioned the DVD, which cites Dr. Bernard Nathanson, and he quotes from the writings of Dr. Peter McCullough. You want to tell us a little bit about who Dr. Nathanson was and what he was talking about?
Yeah, Dr. Bernard Nathanson used to be, at one time, was the head of the largest Planned Parenthood abortion clinic in New York State.
Mm-hmm.
He was a very, very involved in abortion and did numerous abortions. He changed his position at one point when he was doing an ultrasound abortion, and he could see in the ultrasound the baby moving away from the instruments, trying to escape the instruments, and it shocked him because he realized, you know, he talked about this extensively when he would go and give talks later on when he became pro-life. But in any case, Dr. Bernard Nathanson reported on, in one of his talks, this gentleman by the name of Dr. Peter McCullough. And Peter McCullough was a immunologist who wrote a book that was called The Fetus as a Transplant Donor, The Scientific, Social, and Ethical Perspectives. And Dr. Nathanson, in the article, I quote this, what he said, he noted from the book that what they were doing to ensure the organs would be intact was what is called a prostaglandin abortion. They would inject a substance into the womb. The woman would then go into mini-labor and pass the baby. 50% of the time, the baby would be born alive, but that didn't stop them. They would simply open up the abdomen of the baby with no anesthesia and take out the liver and the kidneys, etc.
How can anybody do that? I cannot imagine.
Well, and you know, I mean, that was horrifying enough to me. But as I went through research, and it was, you know, I had put together all of this information. I've been doing this for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think nothing shocks me anymore. But I did find out something that deeply disturbed me, and it came from research going back into the 1930s and where they were using aborted babies for polio research. And
polio
research.
Yeah. And you said the 30s.
Mm-hmm,
so you're
talking
40 years before Roe v. Wade.
That's right. And of course, my first thought was, well, how could they do that? Abortion wasn't legal.
Yeah.
And these were highly accredited scientists, and I was reading what they were doing from their own peer reports that were published in the science journals. I mean, they got the Nobel Prize for polio research was awarded to, you know, two of these scientists. Mm-hmm. So I was shocked, and I had to do a lot of investigating to find out what was going on. And what they were doing back in at that time was what is known as an abdominal hysterotomy. And an abdominal hysterotomy is just like a C-section when you would, but to as far as the method of delivering mm-hmm. the baby is concerned. But you don't do that when you're doing an abortion. I mean, that doesn't make sense.
Right.
Except when you're going to sterilize the woman at the same time.
Oh, okay.
And unfortunately, back in the early 1920s, the United States had passed a law that was called the U.S. Eugenic Sterilization Act. And it was legal in 32 states, actually, to sterilize people that they deemed feeble-minded, mm-hmm. that were not fit to breed, that were epileptic, it was like a cleansing, you know, that going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know this happened in our country. This is before my time.
mine too. And it doesn't sound like such a thing should be going on in the United States ever.
Ever, that's right.
Wow.
I mean, it sounded so much like Hitler, you know, from the Hitler regime. And in fact, one of the people who was pushing this actually had received an award from Adolf Hitler for his work in eugenics.
Was it Margaret Sanger?
No, it wasn't. It was Harry Lachlan. But though Margaret Sanger was noted throughout all of this,
of
the research, she was noted.
And for those who don't know, she was the founder of Planned Parenthood. But anyway, go ahead.
That's right. And her goal at the time was to just get rid of all of the black people.
True.
She didn't, you know, she was very, very racist.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, what I was reading is that they talked about these babies that were being brought into the polio research lab, embryos. They called them embryos, even though they were at the fetal stage. They
mm-hmm.
were older than 8 weeks development. 12, 14, 16, 18 weeks development, and they would bring them into the polio research lab with their hearts still beating.
Mm.
And I thought, this is an intact baby they brought in and dissected.
Mm-hmm.
And then they talked about how they would use the various tissues and organs from the baby to try to cultivate polio virus. And I was just shocked. I really was shocked because I didn't know that long ago.
Yeah, that was used in the research for polio vaccination.
That's correct. Yep. Yeah.
And
it went on for decades until, at some point they had perfected their cell line research. We know that happened in the 1960s, that they had a viable cell line that they could use for rubella. That's actually when they produced the cell line that we use today in our rubella vaccine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So was the polio vaccine, I'm still, because polio has been eradicated from the United States, but was a fetal, again, I'm probably going to get the terminology wrong, a cell line used in the final, I mean, the research involved using a fetal cell line in polio vaccination research, and was that was the end result, the use of fetal stem cells, I get that right. I mean, you know, you're talking about they started using the stem cells in the polio
uh-huh.
research, and that
yes.
was carried out throughout the entire time up until they perfected a vaccine?
Correct. That's right. But they continue to use the cell line. Just to let your listeners understand how this is done, when you want to produce a vaccine, a virus needs to be cultivated. It needs to grow,
mm-hmm.
okay, in order to produce thousands of doses of vaccine. You have to, because each vaccine contains a weakened virus. So what they do is they will cultivate that virus on a particular cell line. Now, it could be cultivated on animal cells, insect cells. It can be cultivated on yeast. There's just a number of cell lines you can use. There's no reason to use aborted fetal cell lines. But what they do in these particular vaccines, for example, the rubella,
mm-hmm.
they will take that virus, which, by the way, also came from an aborted baby, they will take that virus and they will cultivate it on the cell line until it gets to a certain point. They have enough virus now to make several thousand doses of vaccine. And then they will do, it's like called a washing process,
mm-hmm.
okay, where they try to separate the cell from the virus itself and, you know, to get rid of it because they're going to use that virus in the vaccine. But the cells cling to the virus and they end up in the vaccine itself. So when you get a MMR vaccine, you are getting the aborted fetal DNA and cell components from that baby.
Because the virus wraps around it.
Yep, it does. It clings to it. If anyone who has done any kind of biology like research like that in the lab, and you put a virus, let's say, or even your skin cell, you know how it grows, and it's and they will cultivate. They take that cell line and it's frozen, and they will reuse it and reuse it over and over again until, at some point in the future, which we're probably getting close to right now with the some of these cell lines, it becomes unstable and unfit for vaccine research. And the reason is because a cell line doesn't live forever. It's not immortal. It's no different than your cells and organs and tissues in your body that are going to die. Yeah, we're all going to die someday.
Right.
So will these cell lines. And when they become unfit for vaccine production, they need to use a new source. We want them to use a moral cell line.
Right.
However, that's not the intention right now.
Well, no, because I'm assuming their justification is, there's no justification for abortion at all.
No.
But I guess their justification is, the baby's going to be aborted anyway, so let's
get some good out of
it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But there can be no good from evil.
That's correct. That's right. And the other part of it is, originally they thought that it would be safer to use a human cell as opposed to, say, like an animal cell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they thought it might be safer to do that. Well, it's not, and actually it's more dangerous. And the reason is because of the fact that the cells have human DNA, and a person who is receiving the vaccine, a baby especially, is more dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
The DNA has the ability to insert itself into developing cells in the baby's in the baby's brain cells, for example, are rapidly developing. So the DNA has the ability to insert itself. If that happens, it can cause horrible adverse reactions. It can cause autoimmune disorders, cancers, all types of problems. And so, and the FDA is well aware of this. Their theory originally was wrong.
Right.
Because DNA from an animal it doesn't cross species, can't insert. Yeah.
Right. We hear a lot about autism, increased autism.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they're totally denying that the vaccines have anything to do with it.
Right. There are several ongoing studies that are showing a dramatic link between when autism begins to spike. There was at one point, the rate of autism in this country used to be 1 in 10,000. It's now about 1 in 80 children.
Eight, 0, 80?
Yes, 1
You're
in
kidding.
80. No. And there's a reason for it.
Yeah.
And it's not something that's genetic or inherited. And it's not to say that the propensity, the possibility, maybe something in the genetics could cause one child to be more susceptible, to autism than another, which would also explain why not all children who are vaccinated come down with autism.
Right. But still, 1 in 80 compared, you said 1 in 10,000?
1 in 10,000, now it's 1 in 80. That's correct.
Oh, my goodness.
This has changed since they started. The aborted fetal vaccines were introduced into the market in 1979. By 1980, Merck had the only licensed MMR in the United States, and it was the aborted fetal version. So anyone who was vaccinated after that time got that vaccine. They got the MMR. Okay, so they got the aborted fetal version. And at the same time, if you look at the statistics on when autism begins to rise, it correlates with that date. And not just in the United States, but in several other foreign countries where they've gone and looked at when did your autism start and when was your vaccine introduced. And it's identical.
Yet they deny it. They deny it as they take their bags of money to the bank.
That's right. Because it's a major, major concern for a number of reasons, and the main being financing, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If this is true, and they are going to be forced to create a whole entirely new vaccine, MMR vaccine, it's going to cost them billions of dollars to do it.
Well, in the meantime, they're willing to use our kids as guinea pigs.
That's right.
That's terrible. So what can we do? Is there anything we can do? Because they're not listening to common sense. They're not looking at the studies and saying, obviously there's a link between the vaccinations and autism, for instance.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
They're not listening.
No, they're not. And, they should, and the more and more and more that happens, they should. The CDC will tell you that they are ongoing. They are still studying it.
They'll say that 50 years from now. Yeah.
Yeah. They just kind of poo-poo the whole thing off. And so it's very difficult, you know. I mean, and parents are put in an untenable position because they don't know, should we vaccinate or shouldn't we?
Right.
Even if you don't have a concern about the aborted fetal DNA, there should be a concern about the safety aspect.
Absolutely. Wow. So contact.
I think we have to demand, seriously, as citizens, we have to demand that the safety studies be done because the FDA has never, never studied that DNA at all, and they have not looked at their own vaccines. One of the things that the FDA thought is that if they kept the amount of DNA in the vaccines under a certain level, that it would, it would mitigate the chances of it inserting. Well, there's a standard. It's actually set by the World Health Organization and the FDA that you can have no greater than 10 nanograms in any dose of vaccine. But the studies that are going on right now show that it's ranging anywhere from 200 nanograms to 2,000 nanograms per dose.
And they're saying 10 is supposed to be the maximum?
10. Yes. And in the chickenpox vaccine itself, when Merck filed for the approval of that vaccine, they openly stated there were 2,000 nanograms in it right off the bat.
But yet it's FDA approved.
Yep.
So they're not even following their own rules.
That's right. They broke their own rules.
Oh, my. I know it's going to be extremely frustrating for you because you live this, you know, every day of the week. It's frustrating for me just to listen to it. And, you know, I feel like I have my hands tied as far as, you know.
That's right.
You know, because should Congress demand that the FDA, you know, do it, you know, carry out these studies? I mean, it's just frustrating. So how can folks contact you, you know, if they have additional questions?
Well, they're free to contact us through our website, which is www.cogforlife, that's COG for Life, standing for Children of God, the word for, F-O-R, life.org.
Okay. I do encourage folks to do that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm always happy to answer any questions.
Okay, because you have a lot of information on the use, unethical creation of you know, cosmetics and things like that, so which people do not know about because it's all top secret.
That's right. And most of the time, in fact, on the cosmetics, just to say that the FDA does not require disclosure like they do on the vaccines. And so it's almost impossible to find out, though there are some companies that we've looked at products. People call us all the time and ask us about a certain cosmetic, and we can look it up and see if we can find anything. And most of the time, you'll find it. Sometimes in their patents or whatever, what type of materials they're using, and 99.999% of them are fine.
Okay.
Neocutis is one that's not, and we list that. And they openly admitted it. So
they confessed. Wow. Again, thank you for your time and for all the for the research you've done and the work you've done to expose all this, you know, the unethical vaccinations and everything else. I just really appreciate it because so few people know it. You know what's going on. I know there's definitely the concern with the autism, the increase in autism, but I had no idea there was that big of an increase in autism.
It's tremendous, and it's something that our country needs to take a look at.
Absolutely,
now.
Absolutely. Okay. And again, thank you for your time and for your work, and keep up the good work down there.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you.
You take care.
Bye-bye. Okay,
bye-bye.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania, 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.